Okay. Want to, of course, welcome everyone, and of course, a special thank you to the Rosh Yeshiva, Erev Pesach, for coming and speaking to us. Of course, it's a tremendous cover for our shul that Rebbe always makes time to come and share, of course, Torah with us, and we only hope that Rebbe continues to feel well, gesund, for many, many more years to come. L'hagdil Torah, l'adira. Tonight, the shiur is continuation, of course, of the adult ed department that is in memory of Dr. Ira and Doris Kukin. And the shiur itself is sponsored by Sherry and Saul Zimmerman in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Saul's mother, Ida Zimmerman. Sherry and Saul have been sponsoring Rav Shechter Shiurim for many, many years, and we're makir tov to them in Eretz Yisrael for continuing to sponsor the Shiurim here in our community. Without further ado, on Inyanei Pesach, the Rosh Hashiva.
Shalom Aleichem, good evening, everybody. On Pesach, not only are we not permitted to eat chametz, there's a prohibition to have it in your possession, by your motzei. Someone called me on the phone that her sister is coming to her Seder. I was just in Eretz Yisrael. So this woman calls me on the phone. The whole family is coming to the Seder. Her sister is coming with her dog, and she has to feed the dog kidneys. So the shaila is it permissible? So the din is kidneys is beans. It's a minig by Ashkenazim not to eat rice and not to eat corn on the cob, not to eat kidneys. But it's muta b'hanon, and there's no din about yiro by matzah. That's not a problem. But then the shaila got a little more complicated. What if to feed the dog you have to give chametz? So a dog is permitted to eat chametz, but we're not allowed to have chametz in our possession, number one. And even if we sell the dog to a non-Jew, but if we're going to feed chametz to the dog, we're in violation of, we're getting hanah from the chametz. We want to feed that dog chametz. Let's say have a fish tank. In Europe, the Jews had farms, they raised animals, and they were makbed, they wanted to feed chametz to the animals. So it wasn't enough to sell the chametz to the goyish neighbor. They had to sell the animal with chametz to the goyish neighbor. Because if I'm going to sell my animal to the goyish neighbor, and I'm going to feed it chametz, then I'm in violation of being mehane. You're not allowed to feed chametz to a behemoth hefker, it says in Shulchan Aruch. Nurses in the hospital have this problem. The nurses are salaried to take care of the patients medically and to give them meals. So part of the salary is because they're giving meals. So the Gemara says, let's say I'm a truck driver and they pay me to deliver barrels or tray for wine to a store. Stam Yenam. Goyisha wine in the days of the Gemara used to be Asa Ba'anoa. Today, strictly speaking, it's not really Asa Ba'anoa. But in the days of the Gemara, because the Goyim used to be so into Avodah Zarah, it used to be Menasa Chola wine that they would go crazy. There would be Menasa Chola wine. So if I'm a truck driver and they pay me money to deliver the wine to a certain location, they don't pay me to drive an empty truck. They only pay me if I deliver the wine. I'm not handling the wine. I'm just driving the truck. I don't put the wine on the truck. I don't touch it. I don't take the wine off the truck, but still they're paying me to deliver tray for wine at Zos HaBanor, so I'm getting Hanor from the Surah Hanor. Let's say someone is the night watchman in a bakery to make sure nobody steals anything, but the bakery has chametz, so he's going to be a night watchman on Chol HaMoed Pesach. He's getting paid salary to watch the chametz, so he's getting Hanor from the chametz. Or he's going to be a truck driver, he's going to deliver chametz from a goyish bakery to goyish customers. He's getting paid money to deliver chametz. So that's, you're getting hanah from the chametz. So that's an issue that you have to be careful about. So we all go to the rabbi. What do we do when we go to the rabbi? So a lot of the balabatim think we're selling all the chametz to the rabbi. The rabbi's Jewish. What's the rabbi going to do with all the chametz? So we're not selling the chametz to the rabbi. We're appointing the rabbi as our shaliach to sell the chametz on our behalf. So the rabbi has to make sure that he sells the chametz to the non-Jew. I remember when Rabbi Marcus took sick right before Pesach. All the Balabatim had asked him to take care of the Mechiras Chametz. Then he took sick. They had to ask someone else. Were you the assistant rabbi then?
Rabbi Alter.
So you had to have if I appoint a shliach, the shliach has a right to appoint another shliach. So it was Erev Pesach. Rabbi Marcus was not well, so he had to appoint the other rabbi to sell the chametz on his behalf. If a person, let's say, is going to California for Pesach to spend Yontif with his family there, and he asks the rabbi in New Jersey to sell the chametz, so when Pesach is over, the rabbi buys the chametz back from the non-Jew. So if the fellow's in California, Pesach ends 3 hours later for him. So he's not allowed to have the rabbi buy the chametz back. Or let's say he's going to Eretz Yisrael for Yontif. So in Eretz Yisrael, Pesach begins 7 hours earlier than it does in America. So if the rabbi is selling the chametz here in New Jersey in the morning of Erev Pesach, it's already the afternoon of Erev Pesach in Eretz Yisrael. So that was a big machlokes in Europe. Years ago, they didn't travel to the other side of the globe. They used to travel to a different time zone. It was an hour earlier, an hour later. So that was a big dispute whether the rabbi should sell the chametz according to the time where the person is located on Pesach or the time where the chametz is located. Does it depend on the location of the chametz or the location of the owner of the chametz? So that's why the practice developed that you have to notify the rabbi if you're going to the east or going to the west. I'm going to Minneapolis, the Pesach. We're going to spend that. We have a son who lives in Minneapolis and we never see him. Some of the other children live a little closer. Some of the children live in Eretz Yisrael. We were just in Eretz Yisrael for 2 weeks. One grandchild got married, one grandchild became bar mitzvah, and another grandchild got engaged. All in a week and a half. They were kind. They did everything in a week and a half. So you have to notify the rabbi if you're going to the east or you're going to the west. So the rabbi should know. Those who are going to the east, he has to sell the chametz a day in advance. Those who are going to the west, when he buys the chametz back from the Nachri on Matzoi Pesach, he has to say he's not buying back all the chametz. Those who are to the west, he's not buying back the chametz till a few hours later. On Erev Pesach, the practice is, the Gemara never has this, but the Talmud Yerushalmi has this, and one is not permitted to eat matzah on Erev Pesach, because we want that you should be excited, Kadesh Yerucha Matzah Leteav, and should be excited when you eat the matzah on Leil HaPesach. So in Shulchan Aruch, they quote that some feel you shouldn't eat any maror on Erev Pesach, in order that you should enjoy the maror on Pesach night. So the Rambam makes fun of that, well, you have to enjoy the maror. Supposed to have a bitter taste. So he doesn't think that makes sense. Then he quotes that there are those Rishonim, late Rishonim, early Achronim who say that all of the fruits that you use to chop up, to grind up together, to make a charoses, you shouldn't eat any of those fruits. Thank you very much. You shouldn't eat any of those fruits on Erev Pesach in order that you should eat the charoses litayovim. Okay. Thank you. So the Rambam makes fun of that. He said, we don't eat charoses. We dip the maror into the charoses and you shake off the charoses. You don't eat it. But there are several sources where they talk about eating charoses. You look in the Mordechai. Mordechai is one of the commentaries printed in the back of the Rif. After the Rif, Mordechai was the same generation as the Rosh students of the Maharam Ritmerg, the end of the period of the Balei HaTesis. So the Mordechai says, Mordechai assumes that you're swallowing a kezayis of charoses and a kezayis of maror and a kezayis of matzah all at the same time. How can you swallow three kezayisim? You're going to choke. How is that possible? So the Ramoa crossed out the kezayis of charoses. Who eats a kezayis of charoses? We don't eat. In the days of the Ramoa, they didn't have the Shulchan Aruch yet. So they didn't give a shir on Shulchan Aruch. They used to give a shir on Mordechai. So they have in all the editions of the Rif. They always have the Mordechai with things put in parentheses by the Ramah. So he crossed out the Gazais, the last page in the Mordechai Pesachim. He crossed out the Gazais Charoses, and he said, you should say Gazais Korban Pesach. How can you swallow Gazais of Korban Pesach, Gazais of Matzah, Gazais of Mor, all at the same time? You're going to choke. You can't eat so much. So the Ramah crossed it out, but that was the same Ramah who was not happy about this chumah, not to eat the fruits that you use to make the Charoses. In order that you should eat charoses, the oven is, who eats charoses? We don't eat charoses. Then there's a source in the Rambam also. The Mishnah has a dispute, a machlekes among the Tanoim. What is the purpose? What is the role of charoses? So the majority opinion in the Mishnah is, charoses is only needed for medical purposes. that a lot of times the romaine lettuce is going to have worms in it. So there were kosher worms and non-kosher worms. If I said we're talking about kosher worms, but even though the worms are kosher, you don't have to know which worms are kosher. Even though the worms are kosher, but it's not healthy to have live worms crawling around in your stomach. So you want to kill the worms before you eat them. So that's why you dip it into charoses. It's only for medical purposes. And if you know for sure that you don't have any worms, then you don't need the charoses. Rav Elazar ben Tzadik is a Tanna, and he disagrees. The Mishnah quotes Rav Elazar ben Tzadik that charoses is a mitzvah, not a mitzvah. A mitzvah midirabon. What kind of a mitzvah midirabon? So the Gemara has different suggestions. So one opinion is that it's supposed to be a zecher letit, to reminisce about the cement that our ancestors used to build all of those pyramids in Egypt when they were slaves. So it should be thick, like cement. Another opinion is that it's zecher letapuach, because the Pasuk in Shir Hashirim says, tachas ha-tapuach ha-raticha, and the Gemara says, therefore, it should have a tangy flavor. It should be, so tapuach in modern Hebrew means an apple. But in biblical Hebrew, they didn't have any apples. In the days of the Tanakh, the apples didn't grow in the Middle East. So tapuach in biblical Hebrew means citrus fruits. So that's what Tosfos writes in one place. When it says tapuach in the Tanakh, it means citrus fruit. Oranges or lemons or something like esrogim. Tosfos says tapuach means esrogim. The original forbidden tree, the Eitz Hadas, that Adam and Eve ate from, so the Medrash says that it was an esrog tree. So the Christians always have an apple, because the Medrash says it's tapuach, but tapuach doesn't mean an apple. Tapuach means a citrus fruit. So the Gemara says, since according to that opinion, it's supposed to be zecher tapuach, you should squeeze some lemons, or squeeze some esrogim, or squeeze oranges, or pour an orange juice. That should have that kind of a flavor. Then the Talmud Yerushalmi says that it's supposed to be zecher ledam. We should reminisce about all the blood, all the Jewish blood that was shed over the years. Under Shulchan Aruch, they say you should start off, you should have the charoses, it should be thick, and then you should pour in red wine, unless you live in a community, unless you live in a country, there may be Alila Saddam, so they may claim that the Jews are using Christian blood in order to bake matzahs. So if you're going to use red blood, red wine, they're going to think, me or they, what's going on? Remember when I was a student in the yeshiva, the story was going around 1 year, that there was a boy from Torah Vadas who was riding on the train, he was studying Gemara. So there were a group of Catholic ministers came on the train, and they saw the boy. So they asked him, what are you studying? So he said, Talmud. They said, what are you studying? He didn't want to say. So they kept on pressuring him. So he said, well, the Talmud explains how you take the Christian blood and you bake the matzahs. So he said, that's ridiculous. So he said, but you were killing Jews all the generations because of that ridiculous story. There is no such discussion in the Talmud. We don't use any blood. You killed the Catholics, we're killing Jews all the years. In the 1900s, there was an Alila Saddam in Russia, a whole blood libel. So that's the story with charoses. So there's a question, how do we pass them? Do we pass them like the majority opinion? The charoses is only for the purpose of killing the worms for medical purposes, or do we assume the charoses is a mitzvah? So the Rambam, in his commentary on Mishnayos, commentary is written in Arabic. So those of us who are not familiar with Arabic, so we use the Hebrew translation. So in the Hebrew translation, it says that we don't accept the opinion that charoses is a mitzvah. If we would have accepted that opinion, we would have recited the bracha. We would have said a bracha, alachilas charoses. Who eats? We don't eat charoses. We dip them more. So the Rambam apparently thinks that if the din would have been like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, that charoses and mitzvah, there'd be a mitzvah to eat a kazayis of charoses. So the Rambam writes, we don't have such a Haggadah that has such a bracha. So obviously we have not accepted that opinion. We assumed charoses is only for medical purposes. When the Rambam later wrote his Mishnah Torah, his Sefer Psak, so every so often he changed his position from what he wrote in his commentary on Mishnayos. So in the Mishnah Torah he writes, we do paskin charoses is a mitzvah, nonetheless a bracha is not recited. So that's a discussion, why not? But the Rambam writes that according to the view of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, it's not just a mitzvah to dip the morer into the charoses, a mitzvah to eat a kazayis. So some have the practice to eat a kazayis of charoses. We don't say a bracha on it, but some have such a practice. So the Talmud Yerushalmi has this din that everyone agrees to. It's not proper to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. What do you do if you have matzah mel and you bake the cake? So it's in the Shulchan Aruch also. If the cake is baked, even though you say bari min mezonos, you don't say hamotzi on it, but since it was baked, it wasn't cooked, so you shouldn't eat that cake on Erev Pesach either. But if you have kneidlach, you took matzah mel and then you cooked it, so once you cooked it, that's called matzah ashira. So that you can't use. Matzah ashira cannot be used to be yotzei the mitzvah. The Gemara says the pasuk describes matzah as lechem oni, the poor man's bread, lechem oni. And also the word oni means it shouldn't be matzah ashira, it should be lechem oni. So matzah ashira is not acceptable. So if you have cooked kneidlach, anything that you do, use matzah mel and you cooked it, that you may eat on Erev Pesach. But if you use the matzah mel, you made a cake out of it, you baked it, you didn't cook it, that you shouldn't eat on Erev Pesach either. Egg matzah. So a lot of people assume egg matzah is, it doesn't, it's very soft. It's, you don't have to chew it. It goes down your throat like butter. It's very easy to, and it has a whole flavor to it. So we usually assume that any matzah that's made with the juices, with made with meperis, is a matzah ashira. So matzah ashira you're permitted to eat on Erev Pesach. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was always concerned about the Rambam's opinion. The Rambam has an unusual opinion that if you make matzah with orange juice or apple cider, anything else, it's not a matzah ashira. Only if you use one of the four mashkim, yayin, shemen, dvash, or cholov. Based on the Gemara, and you have to break your head to understand why. There's a good, a very good explanation, fascinating, but it would take too long to explain it. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was always, he always liked to learn the Rambam. And he said, based on the Rambam, the Rambam's opinion would be that egg matzah is good for Pesach, for the Seder. You can use it for the Seder. We don't follow the Rambam, but he thought we should be machma like the Rambam, not to eat the egg matzah on Erev Pesach. After the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the Chachamim developed in different communities, they developed different minhagim. So in the middle of Pesachim, you have a perek that's called Mokam Shenohagu. So whenever you have a reasonable minig, so you should follow the minig HaMokam. Midirabbanan, there's a din that a minig that makes sense is binding midirabbanan as if you had taken an neder, even though no one took any neder. So in the days of the Tanoim, after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, there were two minhagim where the bedafka on Pesach night you should eat broiled meat, a zecher lekarbon Pesach, the carbon Pesach had a dafka be broiled, or bedafka you should not eat broiled meat. No one should think that you eat karbonis outside of Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to eat the carbon Pesach outside of Yerushalayim. So there were different minhagim. By now, the minhag all over is that we don't eat broiled meat on Pesach night. And many have the practice, you don't even eat pot roast on Pesach night. You only eat gedempstiff chicken, flesh, if it's cooked with a lot of liquid. But if it's, not only if it's broiled, you don't eat it. Even if it's pot roast, also you don't eat it. Most have the minhag like that. And even in the days of the Tanaim, that there was a practice, and many communities, Dafka, would eat broiled meat to have a zecher to the Korban Pesach. But the din was by the Korban Pesach, you have to broil the whole Korban Pesach before you slice it. You don't make lamb chops and then you broil it. You would broil the whole Korban Pesach, Rosh, Al Krob, Al Kirba, everything all together, and then you slice it afterwards. So if you're going to broil your flesh, well, the whole animal's all together, that looks very much like a Korban Pesach. That's not normally done outside of Korban Pesach. You don't even do it by other Korbanos. They broil the whole Korban all together. So that they prohibited. And the Mishnah, the Gemara in Pesachim describes there was a Jew who lived in Rome, Tudus Yishromi, who was a big tzaddik, and he used to make a zecher le Korban Pesach after the destruction of the second Mishnah. He would broil the whole animal, Rosh al-Krov, al-Kib, all together, and the Tanoim said, if not for the fact that we know that you're a big tzaddik, we would have put you in cherem, because that's not permissible to have. To broil it like you broil the Korban Pesach, that's too much. People will think that he's eating the Korban Pesach. In fact, the Gemara says you shouldn't say, when a balabasta, someone puts away some meat for Pesach, you shouldn't say, this is for Pesach, I'm going to save this for Pesach, because it sounds, perhaps, I'm going to save it for my Korban Pesach. People are going to think that you're eating a Korban Pesach. You should say, I'm putting away for Yontif. So in broyers, they still have hashgachas, and they give the hashgacha and the cheese, so they write kosher al Pesach. So they say kosher lit Pesach, which is correct Hebrew, they say kosher on Pesach. You're allowed to eat the cheese, no one's going to think that it's a korban Pesach. But because they don't want to say on the flesh kosher le Pesach, they write kosher al Pesach, which is incorrect grammatically. So that's what they write on the cheese also, kosher al Pesach. Starting from the first day, Chol HaMoed Pesach, we count Svirah till Shavuos. So on the second night of Pesach, there are different manhagim, the Hasidim, follow the Sfardashim Mekubalim from centuries before Hasidus began. They follow, the Sfardim follow more Kabbalah than the Ashkenazim, and the Hasidim follow a lot of the Daven Nusach Sfard, not exactly like the Eidot HaMizrach, but a lot more similar than the Ashkenazim. So the Hasidim picked up this practice that on the second night of Pesach, instead of counting Svirah in Shul after Ma'ariv, they'll wait till after the Seder to count Svirah. Because it says he counts Svirah mimachras haShabbos, the day after Yontif. So if you're going to count Svirah in Shul, then you're going to say Kiddush. So how is that mimachras haShabbos? It is Yontif. So that's why my wife is from a Chassidish family, so she counts Svirah after the Seder. And you see in the Chassidish Haggadahs, they have Svirah Omer after the Seder for the Chassidim. And the Misnagdim have the practice, not so you're not allowed to eat before you count Svirah, like you're not allowed to eat before you listen to Tkir Shofar, not supposed to eat before you shake the lulav and so on, not supposed to eat before you dab Meirah every night. So the different Minhagim, whether you count Svirah before the second Seder, or after the second Seder. We in Chutz Lortz observe 2 days Yontif. We carry over for many years. They didn't know in Chutz Lortz, those who lived far away, they didn't have telephones, they didn't have email. So they didn't know for sure when Yontif was going to be. So they had to observe 2 days. In fact, in the Tshuvas HaGaonim, those who lived before the days of Rashi and Tosfos, so they have, when did the institution of Yontif Shenim Shel Golias begin? So in Sifrei HaGaonim they write, when Yeshua Ben Nun finished the 7 years of warring, the Sheva Shekavshu took 7 years till they conquered all the 31 kings who had palaces in Eretz Yisrael. There were Lamed Aleph Malachim. So the Bnei Godim Neruvin Chatzus Shevet HaMenashe went back to Eva HaYarden. So Yeshua Ben Nun said, go gezunta, hey, travel safely. Don't forget, from now on, you're never going to know when Yontav is. You better observe Yontav Sheni Shogoli. So the Gaonim have a tradition. Yontav Sheni began in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. That's questionable, but that's what he writes. So the commentaries raise an issue. The Rishonim raised this issue. If we act, so originally there was a Sveka Diyoma. They didn't know exactly when Rosh Chodesh was, so they had observed 2 days Yontif. Then when they established the calendar, we know 2,000 years in advance when that Pesach is going to be on Thursday and Friday. So what do we have to have 2 days Yontif? We know when Yontif is going to be. There's no longer a Sveka Diyoma. So the Gemara says in the beginning of Beitz, and it made a takana, the Chacham made a takana, you should still observe 2 days Yontif. We should act as if there's a Sveka D'Yoma, even though there really isn't. So that's a question. If you're acting as if there's a Sveka D'Yoma, so on the second night of counting Svirah, the first night you say, Hayom Yamecha Boim. The second night you should say, today's either the first night or the second night. And the third night, you say, today's either the second night or the third night. How come we don't continue with the Sveka D'Yoma? How come we're going to have 2 days Shavuos, so how come you don't count Sveka D'Yoma? So the different suggestions that are given, the Ravid and the Baal HaMor, the commentaries on the bottom of the page in the Rif raise this issue. So there's a famous answer that was given by the last rabbi in Kovna, the Dvar Avraham. He died before the Nazis had a chance to kill him. In the Kovna ghetto, the conditions were so horrendous that many of the people died. The health conditions were terrible. So he has a suggestion that picked up, that based on the Gemara, in the beginning of Bav Metzia, the Gemara says, when the farmer is mafrish maisa behema, has to be asiri vada v'loy asiri sofik. Whenever there's a din, you have to count clearly. So if you're going to count svir, you're going to say a bracha, they're going to say, well, today's either the first night or the second night. If you say you're not sure, that's not called counting. So that kills the whole mitzvah. So if you're going to be concerned about a Sveka D'Yoma, and you're going to count it's either the third or the fourth night, So you're not yotzei anything. Counting has to be, you have to know what you're saying. Let's say a person counts sphir, he says in Hebrew, he doesn't know what it says in the Hebrew. They say this line, he doesn't know what that line means. So you're not yotzei, you have to say it in a language that you understand, and you have to be clear how you're counting. So that's famous from the Dvar Avram. There was a great Goyen who lived before the Second World War, Reb Shimon Shkop, who wrote a sefer Shari Yosha, and all the yeshivas that use his sefer. So he quotes this in a certain context in his sefer. He says he saw this answer in one of the Sfarim. He forgot where he saw it. It was a sefer that came out during his lifetime. The Dvar Avram sefer was printed the same time. He forgot where he saw it. Rav Soloveitchik, when he was in the university in Berlin, and his parents had already left to America, so he wanted to talk and learning with someone. So he used the rabbi, the author of the Dvar Avram, the rabbi in Kovne. He was a very prominent rabbi. He used to have his picture in all the shuls in Poland and in Lithuania. They used to have his picture, Rabbi Yitzchak Hanna's picture, in a lot of the shuls, the Kovne Rav. So he used to come on vacation to Potsdam. That was his practice. That was in Germany. So Rav Soloveitchik, and he was related to the Soloveitchik family. He learned the Malozhin, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So Rav Soloveitchik, when he was in Berlin in the university, wanted to talk and learning with someone. So he used to talk with the Kovne Rav. He used to travel sometimes to Vilna to talk and learning with Rav Chaim Moise. All the yeshiva bachim used to talk to Rav Chaim Moise and learning. Chaim Moise was unique. He knew how to talk and learning and pilpul with the Talmud. He knew how to pass the Shilas. He knew how to talk to the Polish Talmud HaChamim in their style and to the Litvish in their style and to write shuvas that everyone would be happy with. He was an unusual, and he knew politics. He understood politics very well. He was a super genius. He was able to give a bechina on smicha and to answer a Shila the woman had on a chicken and talk on the telephone and write a shuva all at the same time. He could concentrate. They said there were some people who can write two svarim on two different gemaras at the same time with both hands. Those are super geniuses. So Rav Soloveitchik, but a lot of times, every so often, he would go to Vilna to talk and learning with Rav Chaim Moise. He said it was the most exasperating experience that he was working a whole week on a certain topic in Halacha, and he would tell it over to Rav Chaim Moise. Rav Chaim Moise would climb up and louder, he'd pull out a sefer. Yeah, it says it in this sefer. He was working a whole week on something. He said, yeah, it says in that sefer, this sefer. Rav Soloveitchik never heard of these svarim. He had all the svarim, he had everything. So Rav Soloveitchik said when he met, he heard this in person from the Dvar Avram, from the Kovne Rav, that the reason why you don't say a bracha on the spheres, the reason why you don't count the sfeika d'yoma, why don't you say today's either the third night or the fourth night, because if you count b'sofek, then you're not yotzei the mitzvah. So he asked him, it doesn't make sense. What about before they established the Luach Kavua? And you really didn't know which day was Rosh Chodesh. You really didn't know there was a real Sveika D'Yoma. Does it mean they didn't count Sfira? So he says he stumped them. In his Sefer, the Dvar Avram has this essay, and then he continues to work on that Kasha, the Rav Soloveitchik guest. The Sefer was written later. But Rav Soloveitchik felt that he stumped them. And the yeshivas are usually assumed that even when there was a real Sveika D'Yoma, it wasn't a real suffix, because the Netziv in his commentary on Chumash at the end of Parshas Emor, in the middle of Vayikra, writes that Ruba de Ruba Ador Hasamach Lenissen. Usually there's only one Ador, once in a while there's another Rishon, another Sheni. So Ador Hasamach Lenissen, Ruba de Ruba only has 29 days, Nissen has 30 days. And Ruba de Ruba Elul is 29 days. It's very rare that Elul is going to have 30 days. So Minatar, you have a right to rely on the Ruba de Ruba that Rosh Chodesh is going to be on the 30th day. Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is going to be on the 30th day of Ador, the 30th day of Elul. It's not going to be on the 31st day. So even when they did have a real Sveika D'Yoma, it wasn't a real Sveika D'Yoma. It was only a Chumrim of the Rabbanon, and they were only a Minik. But it wasn't the real Sofik Deraisa. So that's why they felt that they could still count Sfira Saima with a bracha. And they didn't say today's either the first day or the second day. They didn't count.
Not sitting on Tfilin, which is a Deraisa, by a Sveika D'Yoma that they didn't even know the right
day. That's a very strong question. The Ksav Sofer, the son of the Chasam Sofer, writes this bothered him for years and years, and he doesn't understand why. So he, after writing, then he says he found that there was such a girus in the Gemara. We don't have it in our Gemara. The Gemara says the Chachamim prohibited blowing shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. So we don't do the mitzvah. So they have authority to do that because they were afraid someone's going to be Mechal Shabbos. And then they had the authority to tell us if you have a four-cornered garment that's made from linen, you shouldn't put in tzitzis, because you may put in tchelis, and tchelis has to be a certain colored blue from a certain snail, some kind of a chalazin, and the thread, the string, has to be made from wool. So if the garment is made from linen and the string of tchelis is made from wool, it's going to be shatnas. But it's permissible. But there were a lot of fakers who were selling imitation tchelis, fake tchelis that was indigo. It came from a plant. It didn't come from this snail at all. So the Gemara says they prohibited us from putting tzitzis in the Begad Shel Pishtan. So they have a right to do that. So, but over here he keeps on saying, but what was the great need over here? What was the great need to do away? He doesn't understand it. He doesn't understand. They wanted to make sure if we'll tell people that you have to put on tefillin on the second Yontif, then they'll realize that it's a fake, then they're going to do melocha. The worst thing is going to be, it'll be an Issa Derabbanan, because it's only the first day is Menatar. Second day is only make-believe Menatarabbanan. So because of that, so they said you shouldn't put on tefillin. It's a big problem. He's not sure what the answer is. So the Soloveitchiks came up with this answer, a big chiddush, a question whether it's correct. There isn't really an obligation to put on tefillin every day. Everybody assumes an obligation. Once a day, every day, you have to wear tefillin. They suggest maybe it's not so. There were two opinions in the Gemara whether in HaTorah you have to wear tefillin all day and all night, and it's only midirabbanan that you take off the tefillin at night because people are going to go to sleep, and they won't be able, they'll fall asleep with the tefillin on. So that's, you're not allowed to sleep with the tefillin on. Or it's a din in HaTorah. So they say, if min HaTorah, you're not allowed to wear tefillin balayla, then it's a chiyuv every day, once a day to wear tefillin. But if the chiyuv is 24 hours a day to wear tefillin, so it's just that on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you don't wear tefillin. But there is no din yimuchiv to wear tefillin every single day. That's a big chiddush if you're prepared to accept it. That's a question, whether it's correct or not. Some of the newlyweds have an einfall. They married the girl from down the block. So they want to spend the first half of the Seder by this set of parents and the second half of the Seder by the other parents. So if you spend the first Seder by these parents, second Seder by the other parents, that's not a problem. But what about if you're going to have the first half of the Seder by these parents, second half by the other parents, or let's say someone's sick in the hospital. So you're going to have the first half of the Seder at home with your children, and then you're going to go visit whoever's in the hospital, and you finish the second half of the Seder with them. So the Gemara has a din. All year long, you have to recite Kiddush b'makom suda. You have to recite Kiddush on Shabbos and Yom Tov in the same room, in the same place, and right away. You're supposed to wash right away. At Pesach night, we don't say Kiddush and wash right away. Kach tiknu chachamim. You got to have Kaddush uchatz, karpatz yachatz, magid till you get to the... But that's called Kiddush b'makom suda. But if you're going to have the first half of the Seder till Hamotzi in one location, then you got to go somewhere else. Then you'll have to repeat Kiddush. Then the first Kiddush was the Bracha Levat Tola. So that doesn't make any sense. You have to have Kiddush Mamakam Suda. In the days of the Beis Hamikdash, the Gemara says an interesting Kiddush. If you have a hotel in Yerushalayim, you can't eat the Korban Pesach on the upper floors. Gagam Aliyas Leinis Kachnu. The rooftops and the upper floors don't have Kedushas Yerushalayim, at least for Korban Pesach. For Shlomim, it's a question. For Maaseh Sheni, it's a question. But for Korban Pesach, for sure, the Gemara says, they had to eat the Korban Pesach on the ground level. The Ir Atika is not so big. Yerushalayim is not so big. There were millions of people came to, the Gemara said, there were millions of people came to Be'er L'Regel. People came from Chutzlots. People traveled weeks and weeks to come to Yerushalayim. There is an opinion, Tosfos writes on Dav Gimlam and Beis and Pesachim, that one who lives in Chutz Lortz is not in Mechuyiv in Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach is a Chiyiv that Tzibur should bring. And the Jews who live in Chutz Lortz have a Kedushas Yisrael. They're obligated to do mitzvahs, Kedushana b'mitzvahs v'tzivana, Kedushas Yisrael is machayiv to do mitzvahs, but they're not part of Klal Yisrael. Only the Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael are considered Klal Yisrael. There are certain mitzvahs that only apply in Eretz Yisrael. The agricultural mitzvahs only apply in Eretz Yisrael because the land is holy. But there are certain mitzvahs that have nothing to do with agriculture, and they also only apply in Eretz Yisrael. What is that all about? So because those mitzvahs are chayvus hatzibur. And the Rambam explains, based on a few gemaras, that the tzibur, the tziruf of the tzibur, is only those who live in Eretz Yisrael. That's what Ben-Gurion used to say. Ben-Gurion didn't believe in Kedushas Yisrael, so he only believed that the Jewish people is a nation. So he said, the Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael are Jewish. Jews live in Chutzal, they're not Jewish. If you don't believe in Kedushas Yisrael, so he's right. The only concept you have is a nation of the Jewish people. A nation has to have a national homeland. So those who live in Eretz Yisrael have the tziruf of the tzibur. Those who live in Chutzlots are not part of the tzibur. So that's what Tosfos writes, that the Jews who live in Chutzlots are not mechuyev to come to eat Korban Pesach. But many do come. The Gemara says people would travel weeks and weeks and weeks, and sometimes they would postpone Pesach by introducing Oda Sheni. Today, you can't. I just came back from Eretz Yisrael the other day, so there was the whole nation was going crazy there. So there was a strike in the airport. So the pilots were not taking off. They weren't loading. They weren't letting the people go on the planes. It was wild over there. The country was going wild. So today you can't. We're going to stick in another Sheni. So those who are traveling from Chutz Lords, there were snowstorms and there were flooding. So we give them another month to be able to give them another month. What do you mean? They rent apartments in Yerushalayim. You bought a ticket for a plane. I can't stay the whole month. I have to work. I have to come a month later. You make everything cockeyed. But that's in the days of the Tanoi, in the days of the second base Hamikdash. That's the way they wrap the world. The people would come a month later. They would sometimes postpone Yom Tov Pesach a month because of the early Regolim who were traveling from Chutz Lorets and there were flooding or there were snowstorms. So they gave them another month to come to Yerushalayim. Today you can't do such a thing. So that's an idea. Anyway, so the din is that you have to eat the Korban Pesach on the ground level. There wasn't enough room on the ground level in the Eir Atika, so they had to eat in shifts. So the people, I remember when I moved into the apartment building where I live now, over 50 years ago, so when we moved in, there was only one sukkah for the whole building, and we used to draw lots before sukkahs, who eats the first shift, who eats the second shift, who eats the third shift. And the people in second and third shift are waiting. They don't want the people from the first shift to relax and take all the time in the world. So the same thing in Yerushalayim, when they were eating the Korban Pesach on the ground level, so the people from the later shift would be waiting, finish eating, and give us a chance. So they would have the first three cups of wine. The first cup of wine is Kiddush. Second cup of wine is right before the meal, Asher Ge'olono, Goal Yisrael. Third cup of wine is Birchas HaMazon. So you have to have Kiddush B'makom Suda, so you say Kiddush. Then you eat the meal, and then you have to bench the same place you ate the meal. Then you don't have to say on the ground level. You have to be on the ground level to eat the Korban Pesach. Once you're benched, you can go to the rooftop. So that's what the Gemara said, that was the practice. Kazesa pischa, they ate a kazais of the Korban Pesach, they would bench at the end of the meal. And then the second shift or the third shift would chase them away. Let us start. We didn't make Kiddush yet, it's already an hour and a half after davening. Let us go make Kiddush. So they would go to the rooftops for Halela Poka Igra. When they would sing Halal, they would be dancing and jumping. You felt as if the roof was going to cave in, like sometimes you go to a wedding. And the boys are dancing like Mishigayim. They feel as if the floor is going to cave in. So that's what the Gemara says. In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, they used to go to the rooftops to finish, not to finish the meal. After the benching was over, they would finish the end of the hallel and drink the fourth cup of wine there. That you can do. You can have the first three cups of wine in one location. Then you can go, after the benching, you can go to the new place. There's a famous comment, Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi, the Baal HaMo'or, on the Mishnah in the end of Pesach, after Nacha Pesach Afikayman, you're not allowed to eat anything after you finish eating. In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to eat anything after you finish eating Korban Pesach. That's the last thing. After the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, no more Korban Pesach. So there is a dispute in the Gemara whether the din applies today. Eim aftirin acha afikayman. After you eat the matz in the end, also, there's a din, you shouldn't eat anything. Or does it only apply bizman shabbos hamikdash? You should have the flavor of the flesh in your mouth. So we paskin even today that there's not bizman shabbos hamikdash. You shouldn't eat anything after the matzah at the end of the meal. Why not? So the Baal HaMo'or gives a historical interpretation. He says because the people ate the first three quarters of the Seder was on the ground level. Then they had to go run because the second shift or the third shift or the fourth shift kicked them out. It's our turn. Let us eat. So they had to go find a place to finish the end of the Seder. So they had to go find the rooftop. So they go to one house. Maybe it's locked. They can't get up to the roof. Go to another house. Too many people. They may give up. So they may not say the rest of the Seder. So they said it then. You're not allowed it. You should have the tama of the Korban Pesach in your mouth to make sure that you don't forget to finish the challah. But after you finish the whole Seder, the whole Arba Kosev, then you can eat and drink whatever you want. That's what the Baal HaMor says. We want that you should have tam Pesach b'fiv, tam matzah b'fiv, that you shouldn't forget, because most of the people would only eat, have the first three quarters of the Seder on one occasion, then they would be kicked out by the next shift. So you want to make sure that the first shift doesn't forget to say the last part of the halal. So we say, you're not allowed to eat anything until you finish the whole Seder. After you finish, you can eat. Our practice is we don't follow that opinion. We say that you're not allowed to eat even after you finish the whole Seder. You should go to sleep. You shouldn't brush your teeth that night. You should go to sleep with the tam of the matzah in your mouth as a chavivas hamitzah. Yeah, what's the story? You really have to drink wine. Can you have grape juice? The Rambam writes, based on the Gemara, has to be shtiyah areva. It has to be a pleasant. You have to enjoy the wine. In the days of the Gemara, the wine in Eretz Yisrael used to be very strong. And it didn't taste good unless you would dilute it a little bit. They would do meziga, they would mix in a little water. So the Gemara says, Shosan Chai, if you drink the Arba Kosev and you didn't do meziga, you didn't mix in any water, you're not fully out of the mitzvah, so the Ramanites has to be Shtiyah Reb. So that's a question, whether grape juice is considered like wine or not. So historically, the first one who paskin in America that grape juice is acceptable for Arba Kosev for Kiddush Abdullah was a prominent person from the Jewish Theological Seminary, from the conservative seminary in New York. It was during Prohibition years. It was against the federal law to make alcoholic beverages unless you needed it for sacramental purposes. So in the churches, they needed it for their Avodah Zarah. After they recite their Hocus Pocus, that rhymes with the Latin prayer that they recite. So they believe that the biscuit and the wine converts to be the flesh and the blood of Jesus. And then they eat it. So they're eating Jesus. So they needed wine for their Avodah Zarah. So they were permitted to. And the Jews were also making wine because they needed it for Kiddush and Abdol. So Louis Ginsberg used to learn and tells the yeshiva in Europe. He's supposed to be a big Talmid Chacham. And on his Sfarim that he wrote in Hebrew, on the first page he writes, Dorsh Mini Lahagro. He was an eighth generation from the Vilna Gaon. Very proud of his yichas, Dosh Mini Lahagro. He used to sit and learn Begila Hirosh. He used to sit and learn without a yarmulke. He had all the Gemaras open. He was a big Talmid Chacham. He knew a lot. But he was the head of the conservative seminary. He was trying to save, they meant L'Shem Shemayim. They wanted to save Judaism, but it didn't work. The conservatives are totally bankrupt now. Literally bankrupt. They're selling the whole library. They're selling the buildings. There are hardly any students there. Anyway, so he came and he mastered to the federal government that it's not true, that the Jews don't really need wine with alcoholic content for sacramental purposes. They can just as well make Kiddush and Adol and Arba Kosev on grape juice. So when he came up with this Kiddush, so many Rabbanim disagreed. One of them, there was before Rabbi Moshe Feinstein came to America, the major Posek was Rabbi Henkin. In New York, so Rabbi Henkin published the tshuva. He thinks that grape juice is shahakal. He thinks that it's not bor piagofen. If you have, the Gemara says, if a person is stuck, he doesn't have any wine, so go to the store and buy grapes and squeeze out the wine. You can say bor piagofen. That's because the grape juice, if you let it sit longer, if you let it sit, it'll ferment, it'll turn into wine. But the grape juice that we have is treated chemically in such a way that it's never going to ferment. So he followed the opinion from earlier poskim that shahakal, that doesn't have the hashivas of wine, and is not acceptable for Kiddush and Abdullah or for Arba Kosev. The first Orthodox prominent person, many disagreed with Louis Ginsberg. Many Rabbanim disagreed. They say the Lubavitcher Rebbe is always insistent on using wine instead of grape juice, even after he had a stroke, even after he wasn't healthy, the last years of his life. He always used dafka wine. The first prominent Pesach whom we follow, who said that grape juice is acceptable even though it cannot ferment, was Rav Moshe Feinstein. He said that it's okay. But he had a chiddush. He thought that for Arba Kosev it's not acceptable. You have to have dafka wine because Because since you're drinking a toast, alachaim, you don't make a toast on orange juice, make a toast on schnapps, on wine that has alcoholic beverage. If it doesn't have alcoholic content, so what kind of alachaim is it? So that was Rav Moshe's opinion. But most of the poskim accepted Rav Moshe's view that grape juice is bar piagov and it's good for kiddush, and although it's good for abakosis as well. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach like that, Rav Soloveitchik. So Rav Soloveitchik used to say, if a person has a stomach problem and he doesn't enjoy the wine, he's going to get sick from it. So let him use grape juice. It has to be shtiyah areva, it has to be pleasant tasting. So if he enjoys grape juice better than wine, let him use the grape juice instead of using the wine. The minig by Ashkenazim is that you say Borei Pi'agofen four times on Pesach night. On the first coast, the second coast, the third coast, the fourth coast. The Sephardim only say Borei Pi'agofen twice. On the first coast, you say Borei Pi'agofen. Then, 25 minutes later, you're going to have the second coast of wine. How long is it going to take? 35 minutes. So if you're having a drinking party inside Borei Pi'agofen, so you have a second cup 35 minutes later, you don't see another Borei Pi'agofen. Then you eat the meal on your bench. So after your bench, you have to drink the third course. You have to say Bar Piagofen. Birchas Hamazon is a declaration that you finished eating. So if you want to continue drinking wine, you have to say another Bar Piagofen. That's the third cup of wine is Birchas Hamazon. Then the fourth cup should really be covered with the Bar Piagofen. Instead on the third cup, how much time is there between the benching and the fourth cup of wine? It doesn't take so much longer afterwards. So the Sfardim only say Bar Piagofen twice on the first course. And on the third course, and the second and the fourth are covered with the first Bar Piagofen. The Ashkenazim don't follow that opinion. Ashkenazim follow the view that even though the Bar Piagofen on the second cup and the fourth cup is not needed because of Hilchas Birchas Hanenin, but that's the din. Whenever you have a bracha ala kol, so you have to say Bar Piagofen, even though it's not needed. Mitam Birchas Hanenin. That's the halacha of a bracha ala kol. That's what we do by wedding also. In the days of the Tanakh, in the days of the Gemara, the wedding has two parts to it. So you have Eris and you give the ring, say, Haret Mekudesh Asli. Then they would wait a year. And then the Chosim would go get a job. He would buy clothing. The Kala would buy also clothing, sheets, beds, furniture, whatever. And then sometimes it would take up to a year later. And then that's the first Mishnah in Ksubas. If a girl is getting married for the first time, so the girl gets married on a Wednesday. That's why there's an expression, Senemtaim, Ayorin Amitvach, it takes a year and a Wednesday. Because between the first stage of the marriage and the second stage of marriage, sometimes it would take a whole year, and then he has until the Wednesday after the year is up to finally get married. He can't dilly-dally with the girl. Either you marry me or you give me a get. I don't want to be in limbo over here. So that's the source of that expression, Senem, Ayorin Amitvach, a year and a Wednesday. So in the days of the Tanakh, in the days of the Gemara, there would be a long pause in between. So they said Bar Piagofen over a cup of wine when they got married, when he gave the ring, said Harayat. And then a year later, when they would move in together, they would say the Sheva Brachah, again Bar Piagofen. It was a year later. But in the days of the Bale, in the days of the Goinim, they changed that practice, and they decided to move up. We don't separate between the Erisin and the Nisuin. We have the Nisuin right after the Erisin. Rabbi Natam introduced Kriyas HaKsuba in between. Because he just said Bar Piagofen, and then the Chosin gave the ring to the Kal, says Harayat, then you can say another Bar Piagofen. He just said Bar Piagofen a minute ago. What are you saying another Bar Piagofen? So in order that it should look better, so you read the Ksuba. How long does it take to read the Ksuba? It doesn't take so long, but it doesn't take a year and a Wednesday. It takes 3 minutes to read the Ksuba, 5 minutes to read the Ksuba. It doesn't take so long. So that's the question. How can we say second Bar Piagofen just said? So the answer is the Ashkenazim do the same by Pesach, by the Seder. Whenever you say a bracha lakos, you say Bar Piagofen, even though it's not really needed, mitam birchas hanenin, that's the din. When you say a bracha lakos, you have to say Bar Piagofen. The question is the Sfardim, who only say a bracha on the first kos and the third kos, they don't say on the second and the fourth. So why by the Sfardim when they have a wedding, why did they say Bar Piagofen on the second cup? Why do they have Sheva Brachas? Should only be six Brachas. The first of the Sheva Brachas is the Bar Piagofen. Why are they saying another Bar Piagofen? They just said 5 minutes ago. That is a strong question. What is the Arba Kaisis all about? What is it all about? So there's a famous dispute between Tosfos and the Rambam. Tosfos says, just like you say Kiddush. One person says Kiddush, he drinks the wine, everybody's yotzei. One person says Havdalah. When you have a bris, and one person says Bar Pe'agov, and Hashem Kiddush, he did me bet, and he drinks the wine, and everybody's yotzei. So the same is by the Arba Kosis. One person should say Kiddush and drink the wine, and one person has Shegi Alon and drink the wine. You don't need, everybody has to have their own kos. We don't follow, and the Tosfos' opinion is that you don't have to really drink Rov HaKos. If you drink a Malay Lugmav, less than Rov HaKos, it would also be good. The Gemara says Rov Kos, and Tosfos says Lav Davke. It really means Malay Lugmav. So the Minig is not like Tosfos. Minig is like the Rambam, that there are two aspects to the Arba Kos. One is there are four brachas al HaKos. You recite Kiddush al HaKos, Hashir Gealonu, Goal Yisrael al HaKos, Birchas HaMozen al HaKos, and Birchas Hashir. The last part of the halal, you have a bracha at the end, that's called Bichas Hashir. That's one aspect, bracha lakos. So if that would be the whole story, only one person would have to drink. But in addition to that, we say that there's a mitzvah mid the Rabbanu, b'chol dar v'dar chayvarim laharis es atzma. In the Chumash, there's a mitzvah, b'chol dar v'dar chayvarim liris es atzma. Everyone should have the attitude as if we just left Mitzrayim. That's a very difficult attitude, and most people do not fulfill that mitzvah. Most people think, what do you mean? We would still be slaves in Egypt. Lincoln freed the slaves in America. They freed the blacks in South Africa. They freed all the slaves in the world. There's still slavery in certain countries. But all the slaves in the world were all freed. So what do you mean? We would still be slaves. Why would we still be slaves? So you have to understand that. So that's, we don't fully understand that. We don't appreciate that. That's a mitzvah in Atar. B'chol davador, everyone should have the feeling as if he just left Mitzrayim. And with the Rabbanon, they made it takon b'chol davador chayivanim laharis es atzma. You have to demonstrate that you're a ben chorin. So drinking arba kosis is the way we demonstrate. They didn't give slaves l'chaim to have a good time, to drink a toast. Only the free people. So we do two things. We do haseba, we eat in a reclining position, and we drink arba kosis. So this is the, so that's why we insist everyone should drink the Arba Kos. Not enough if one person drinks. There was a big issue during the First World War. You look in the Shadus Achuvus literature, during the First World War in Europe, they didn't all have that much wine. I have a house full of wine. People bring me Shalach Manas, I have enough wine for the next 5 years. with many guests. I have many guests on Shabbos. We still have enough wine for 5 years. But during the First World War, there was a big lack of wine. So the Shaila was, and Shulchan Aruch it says, if there's no wine for the Arba Kosis, then you can use Chamar Medina. You can use a cup of hot coffee, a cup of hot tea, whatever would be, whatever kind of a drink you would serve to guests, to be mechabedim. Water, it doesn't count. There should be something bekavedik. So in Europe, when people would come, you give them a hot cup of water, coffee. So there was many assumed hot tea, hot coffee was considered Chamar Medina. So the question was, does it make sense that one person should say Arba Kosis, there was enough wine for one person, some community. Would it make sense one person should have the Arba Kosis with wine and everybody else should have Chamar Medina? Everybody else should have a cup of coffee or tea because there wasn't enough wine to go around. So that's what many of the Rabbanim said, you don't accomplish anything. The whole idea of everybody drinking is that to show that we're all B'nai Chorin. So that you're not Yotzi with Chamar Medina. For that you have to have Davka something with that's a mashke, so the schnapps or something. Stam, to say L'chaim on a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, that's not a L'chaim. If you don't have any wine at all, then you use Chamar Medina. But if you have enough wine for one person, Shai, so the one person will say, you don't gain anything by having everybody have Chamar Medina. Rav Soloveitchik, every year when he would give the shir for the Balabatim before Pesach, he'd always demonstrate how do you do Haseba. So a lot of people sit on a chair and they lean over when they're drinking the wine like this. What are they leaning on? They're leaning on themselves. There's nothing to lean on. So the Gemara says, if there's somebody next to you, you can lean on his shoulders. But there's nobody there, so they're just leaning in midair. So he'd always demonstrate, you have to sit like this and lean on the chair. Like this. You have to lean on something. You can't just lean in the middle of nowhere. You thought that you're not Yotze Haseba by that. I remember many years ago, the first year I taught in the yeshiva, so I had a student who now teaches for many years in Ben Gurion University. He's in agriculture. He's in vegetables, these kind of things. The yeshiva used to have a publication that was called Gesher, to bridge the gap between Torah and science. They haven't printed in the last 50 years. But I remember this student then wrote an essay, and they finally translated the essay into Hebrew, and more people read it in Bnei Brak, and they stopped using horseradish. He explained that al pi halacha, horseradish is not really maror. The Gemara says the five vegetables that are listed in the Mishnah, in Psochem and Daf Lamed Tes, you can use any of the five vegetables for maror. The Gemara says they're all leafy vegetables. Horseradish is a root. It's not a leafy vegetable at all. So the Mishnah is not talking about that. So when did they start the horseradish? He documents it. He quotes Shuvas and Achrayim. When the Jews moved so close to the North Pole that the lettuce was not available. It wasn't growing yet at that season of the year. It wasn't available. So then there was one opinion that if maror is not available, one of the five vegetables is not available, so you should use some other vegetable that has a bit of flavor. So that's when they started using horseradish. But he points out that horseradish is not really bitter. It's sharp. It's a totally different sensation. So he used to learn Bacharusa with a medical doctor. When he was single, he lived in my building. Then when he got married, he moved to Burr Park. But he used to be in the emergency ward in the hospital for a while. He said the two nights of the year that the Orthodox Jews come to the hospital, that two nights of Pesach, when we're celebrating Zman Chereseinu, the people get sick because they eat horseradish, because they drink too much wine, and they get sick. So that's the way they celebrate our freedom, by going to the emergency ward. That's terrible. So if a person can't take wine, they should drink grape juice. Can't take grape juice, so they use Chamar Medina. It says in Shulchan Aruch, use coffee. Use something that you would give a guest. And about the maror, the pashtus is the horseradish is not really the correct thing. It's lettuce. So in the days of the Talmud, they didn't have regular iceberg lettuce in Eretz Yisrael, that part of the world. They only had romaine lettuce. So that's where Rav Soloveitchik goes. You say you should use romaine lettuce. You people live in New Jersey. So Rabbi Aaron Kotli used to live in New Jersey. He lived in New York. But his yeshiva was in New Jersey. He would live in New York all week long. He just went to the yeshiva on Shabbos. That's why they had very few tapes of his shiurim. His shiurim were always given on Shabbos. So Rabbi Aaron Kotler said, regular iceberg lettuce is also good. It's not such a big difference between romaine lettuce and iceberg lettuce. Regular lettuce is also good. How is that bitter? The romaine lettuce is not bitter. The iceberg lettuce is not bitter. So the Rishalmi asks that question. The Mishnah lists off five vegetables that are acceptable. And the first one is the lettuce. How is it bitter? So the Rishalmi says if you would let it continue to grow in the ground longer, it would become bitter. And that's preferable, the first vegetable, because that's the way the Shibud was in Mitzrayim. First, they were very nice to the Jews. They're very hospitable. They're very friendly with the Jews. And then, after a couple of years, then it became very bitter. So that's why it's preferable to use such a lettuce that's reminiscent of the way the Shibud was in Mitzrayim. So you have to use romaine lettuce. Romaine lettuce usually has a lot of worms in it, so you have to wash it out well to make sure you're not eating the worms. So a lot of people feel bad about giving up the ancient practice of having horseradish, so they pour some horseradish on top of the romaine lettuce. So the pashtus is that kills the mitzvah, because the horseradish is not really a min of maror. So let's say the Gemara says animals eat also. Human beings, non-Jews eat, Jewish people eat also. To stay alive, you have to eat food. So when you eat something of the Shem Mitzvah, you have to eat it separately from everything else. The Gemara said, if you're going to eat matzah together with a chocolate bar, which is a Dvar Hashus, then you're not yet to the Mitzvah of matzah. Since the chocolate bar is a Dvar Hashus, then the matzah loses its mila of being a mitzvah. If you want to eat a carbon, you shouldn't eat the carbon together at the same time as something else. You should eat the carbon, then eat something else before and after. But don't eat it together. So if you're going to pour horseradish on top of the romaine, it's going to eat it together, that's going to kill the mitzvah, because the horseradish al pi pashtus is not a min of maror, and it takes away the mitzvah. Ashkenazim have a minig not to eat kidneys. Even though the Gemara says they ate rice, so in the Gemara there was no such minig. But there is a mocker in the Gemara. If you look in the Gemara, Daf Mem on the base, Tosus learns that where the people in charge of the kitchen are not such Yirei Shamayim, so the Tosus quotes from the Oruch. The Oruch was written by one of the Rishonim who lived in Rome. So he is a contemporary of Rashi. So he says that that's the Chumrah of Kitnius. That if the one running the kitchen is not so medaktik a mitzvah, you shouldn't allow any kitnius, because they may by mistake think that you can take regular flour and mix it with water, and also that'll become chametz. So that's why the practice is by the Ashkenaz. Many Ashkenaz don't eat rice. They don't eat corn in the cob. I remember once a fellow called me up from Tinek. He came home from work in Chalamoid, and his wife says, "Darling, look what I made for supper." She got corn on the cob. And she cooked it for supper for Chalamai Pesach. So he's ready to divorce his wife over the corn on the cob. So I told him, what should he do? She made tray for all the pots. I said, there's no bayura by motzei on kidneys. Just put it in the refrigerator and save it till after Pesach. The pot, you shouldn't use the pot in the first 24 hours. Kidneys doesn't make the pot treif that you have to kashu it. Just wait 24 hours. Then you can use it for, I think, for next Pesach. There won't be any problem. There's not bayura by motzah and kidney. It's muta bahano. You can feed it to your dog. If the dog food or the fish food has kidneys, that's not a problem. The meaning is Ashkenazim don't eat it. As far as peanuts, so I always tell over that when I was in high school, when I was in elementary school, I was born in the middle of the Second World War. When I was in elementary school, my rabbeim were big talmidei chachamim. They taught us Chumash and Rashi. They knew all the Rashis from the Gemara. They didn't need Rashi. They knew the Rashi and the Tosfos and the Pnei Yeshuas. So one of my rabbeim in high school told us, he remembers in Europe, he always ate peanuts on Pesach, and he learned in Shanghai, when the Mir Yeshiva was in Shanghai. He was like, so that was the first time he heard that there's an issue of eating peanuts. They were sitting in Beis Medrash on Chalmoid eating peanuts, and the Chinaman who washed the floor said, "Hametz!" So he said, "What hametz?" He kept on pointing. So they said, "Where? What? What are you talking about?" He touched the peanut. He said, "What does it have to do with hametz?" That was the first time they ever heard that the Jews don't eat peanuts on Pesach. So that became a minig somehow. But when I was growing up, everybody used plantas peanut oil, kosher le Pesach. Everybody used peanut oil. Because peanuts is questionable in the first place. And even if you have real kidneys, but the shemi kidneys, if you prepared it, kosher le Pesach shouldn't be a problem. So now none of the kashrus organizations give a hashgach anymore, because somehow the meaning of kidney has developed and it keeps on growing bigger and bigger. Rav Moshe Feinstein makes fun of this. He says, "We enough with the kidneys. We should not add any more kidneys, but they keep on adding on more." So what can you do? Let's say an Ashkenazi marries a Sephardi girl and is going to the girl's parents for Pesach, so they cook the chicken with rice. So you should push the rice to the side. Don't eat the rice, but you can eat the chicken. Even though the chicken has the flavor of the rice in it, there's no din of tam ki iker by kidneys. It's bottle bereived. The chicken is always going to be more than the flavor of the rice that's going. Ashkenazim don't eat kidneys, but you can eat the chicken that has the flavor from the kidney. That's not a problem. There were different practices, whether you would insist on using hand shmura for the Seder, or you insist, or you allow, or you even insist on using machine shmura. So there were many who insisted on using machine shmura because it's more mishumer, takes much less time. From the time that you mix the water into the flour till the time that it comes out of the oven, it's much less time than if you do it by hand. So in Yerushalayim, that was the minig, that they insisted davka machine shmur, the whole Pesach. They wouldn't use hand shmur. The Soloveitchik family also liked that. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, there was a period, that's Rabbi Soloveitchik's father, there was a period of time that he had a position teaching in a yeshiva in Warsaw. And Warsaw was basically a Hasidic community, so they wanted to get him into trouble. So one of the writers for the local newspaper interviewed him before Pesach, and he asked him, "What does he think about the hand shmura?" So he said he doesn't think that you gain absolutely anything. There's no gain at all. If anything, the hand, the machine shmur is much better than the hand shmur. So they printed it in a newspaper, and the Chassidim always insisted you have to davke use hand shmur. You can't use machine shmur. What's the issue? The issue is that you have to bake the matzah lishmo. So that's a question. You push a button and the machine goes for hours and hours and hours. You can go to sleep and the machine keeps on going. So that's called asir lishmo. So we assume that yes, based on the Gemara and Bava Kamma, that ishem yishum chitzav, if you harness a natural force and you have it do a whole job, even though you go to sleep, whatever follows from that is considered as if you did it. That's called ishu. If you made a fire, mishum chitzav, as if you shot an arrow. So Rav Velvele Soloveitchik, the younger brother of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, has in his sefer a whole shtikal Torah. It's not halacha l'maisa. There was one opinion. He explains how that opinion read the Gemara. He doesn't say we should paskin like that. He explains there was an opinion in the days of the Rishonim that idea, ishim mishim chisav, if you harness a natural force, electricity, let's say, and it bakes matzahs for 10 hours and I'm not there, I go to sleep, that's only considered as if you did it for nizikin purposes. But in Kol HaTarkuli, you don't say ishim shim chitzav, so then matzah was not made lishma. But we don't really accept that opinion. But that's what the Chumra is based on. That there was a minority opinion that wasn't really accepted that ishim shim chitzav is not a din in Kol HaTarkuli, it only applies in nizikin. This year, Yontav is Thursday and Friday, so we who live in Chutz Lortz have to make an Erev Tavshil. Those who live in Eretz will only have Yontav on Thursday, so they don't need an Erev Tavshil. So if you make the Erev Tavshil on Wednesday, then you say a bracha. But even when you make the Erev Tavshil, you're only allowed to cook on Friday for Shabbos. You're not allowed to cook on the first day. On the first day, Yontav is Yontav, and on Thursday, second Yontav is only Yontav and the Rabbanon. So there's no heter on the level of the Raisa, it's not Shabbos next to Yontif. So you're allowed to cook on the second day Yontif. What if a person forgot, and Eretz Yisrael, they never have this, and Chutz Lortz, if Yontif is on Thursday and Friday, and one forgot to make the Erev Tavshilin on Wednesday, what do you do? So it says, Nigmar, you can make the Erev Tavshilin on Thursday, Al HaTanai. You say, if today is Yontif, if the first day Yontif is Thursday, then tomorrow Friday is Chol HaMoed. So I don't need an Erev Tavshilin. And if today is Erev Yantam and tomorrow is Yantam, so I'm making the Erev Tavshil. So then if you make the Erev Tavshilin on Thursday, Allah tonight, then you don't say a bracha. If you make it on Wednesday also, you shouldn't say a bracha. Because it's a Sveika Diyama. So somehow we don't paskin like that. Somehow we say, no, if you make the Erev Tavshilin on Wednesday, you do say a bracha. Make the Erev Tavshilin on Thursday, Allah tonight, then you don't say a bracha. So you got to have that in mind. Many people don't know how to make an Erev Tavshilin, so they rely on their rabbi. So the rabbi has to be makna. The rabbi sets aside an Erev Tavshilin. He has to give it to someone else other than his family. They should pick it up and be kind of shutfus, so all of those who won't make an Erev Tavshilin. So a lot of people, if the rabbi is afraid, he'll forget. So usually, often the rabbi will make the Erev Tavshilin bright and early in the morning, on Wednesday morning, to make sure he doesn't forget. So a lot of people go to work. There are people who work for a living. I'm among them. So a lot of people go to work. So if you'd call them up on Wednesday morning, ask him, do you want to be yotzei with the rabbi's Erev Tavshilin? You want to make my son? No, I want to make my own Erev Tavshilin. I want to say a bracha. If the rabbi is going to do it, the rabbi is going to say a bracha. I don't want to lose the opportunity. But then, so if you call them up, the rabbi makes the Erev Tavshilin bright and early, 8 o'clock, right after the 7 o'clock minyan. Next day of Tavshilin, and if you would call up the Baal HaBos is already on his way to his office, he would say, I don't want to be yotze with the rabbis of Tavshilin. Then he gets in a traffic jam on the way home. Then until he takes a shower, he runs to shul. He forgot all about making an Erev Tavshilin. Then it's already too late. He can't rely on the rabbis of Tavshilin. It has to be a zechus at the time that the rabbi is putting away. So for those who don't know how to make an Erev Tavshilin, so you got to rely on the rabbi. So if you would ask him, 8 o'clock, do you want the rabbi's Erev Tavshilin? They say yes. But those balabatim who didn't want the rabbi's Erev Tavshilin, it has to be a schus at the time that the one is doing it on your behalf. So that's a problem. That is the problem. If you would consult them and they would say, don't do me any favors, I want to make my own Erev Tavshilin. Then it turns out that they needed the rabbi's Erev Tavshilin. Toignish. So they're going to have to make their own Erev Tavshilin on Thursday, Allah Tanai, without a bracha. We often say in the course of the year, we say a lot of brachas ala kos, we say kiddush, we say havdol ala yayin. A lot of times by shalosh shudas, you bench mezuman, you say over a cup of wine. By a bris, by a chasana, you say bracha ala kos. So there's a dispute, b'sham ebisul, which bracha do you say first? So we know, we always say bar piagofen first, say bar piagofen, then you say kiddush, bar piagofen, you say asher. Shekiddush, you did me betin by a bris or by a chasana, you say for bar piagofen first. If by mistake is said it the other direction, but yeah, but it's okay. But l'chatchila, the proper practice, you say bar piagofen first. The one and only exception to the rule is when you bench ala kos. Because the Tais says, why is that an exception to the rule? Because if you're going to say bar piagofen first and then bench, so benching b'chsamazin is a declaration that you finished eating. So then if you want to drink the wine later, you have to say another bar piagofen. Bar piagofen is said before the benching is negated. Once you say bench, that's a hesachadas from drinking any wine. So why say bar piagofen twice? So you say one bar piagofen after you finish. On Pesach night, it's a pella. Ashkenazim have the practice, we say bar piagofen four times. So on the second cup of wine and the fourth cup of wine, the way it's printed in all the Haggadahs, they have the bar piagofen after the bracha goal Yisrael, and after the brichas hashir. And it really doesn't make sense. They should really say bar piagofen before. So you get the impression as if they had a svardash, they had a svardash Haggadah that didn't have bar piagofen on the second and the fourth cup. And then the rabbi told the printer, stick in a bar piagofen. So he stuck it in the wrong place. He put it after the bracha. But it's really, it's a mystery. Why the bar piagofen? Some of the commentaries on the Haggadah point it out, but they don't explain it. They give some kind of weak explanation.
Should one switch? Should one move it to...
I don't know. I don't switch it, but it's a problem. Someone should really work on it to try to figure out, is there a logical explanation, or is it just a misprint? Maybe it's just a mistake. I don't know. The fourth bracha, alakos, is the bracha at the end of the Hallel. That we divide the halal, we say part of the halal before the meal, part of the halal after the meal, to be kaber the suda as the suda soidoya. So the fourth bracha is called birchas hashir. What exactly is birchas hashir? So the Gemara has a dispute what that is referring to. One opinion is it's yihalalucha, like you always say yihalalucha at the end of the halal. But usually yihalalucha depends on the minhag hamokim. If the minhag hamokim, you don't say halalucha, so you don't say. And on Pesach night, it doesn't depend on meaning. I'm welcome, you have to say halucha. The other opinion is no, it's nishmas kol chai through yishtabach. So the Gemara says, we say both. So what do you mean we say both? So there's some old haggadahs from centuries ago that they had both. At the end of the hal, you have yihalalucha melech mehulol batish bachos. Then you have hodol Hashem kitav ki liyalam chazdoi. That's 24 psukim, whatever, all the ki liyalam chazdoi. Then you have nishmas kol chai. That's the beginning of the bracha, and then you say from nishmas kol chai through yishtabach. So Taisa thinks that that's a mistake. You don't say two brachas, you only say one bracha. So how exactly do you say it? How do you arrange it? So there are two minhagim, minig Ashkenaz and minig Sfarz. So minig Ashkenaz goes straight. You say, finish the halal, then you say halalucha up until and not including the last line. You don't say melech mehulol batish bachos. You say halalucha till that. Then you say the 24 psukim kil yolam chazdai. Then you say nishmas kol chai, you say yishtabach. And that's the birchas hashir. And Nusach Svarad goes backwards and forwards. Nusach Svarad, you say halal till Hodol Hashem Kitav Kili Yolam Chazda, you say twice, then you leave that, you halalucha, and you say the 24 psukim Kili Yolam Chazda, then you say Nishmas Kahai till the end of Ishtabach, up until and not including the last line, and then you go back and you say halalucha, that you should have said before. So they say in Shulchan Aruch, in my home, have a lot of Haggadahs that I got in the mail over the years from all the different hospitals in Eretz Yisrael and different, the Maxwell House Coffee and everybody else send Haggadahs. So half of them on Nusach Ashkenaz, half of them on Nusach Sfarz. It says in the Shulchan Aruch, you should decide in advance what your family minig is. The Hasidim daven Nusach Sfarz, and the Sfardim say Nusach Sfarz, so they should make sure that everybody has a Nusach Sfarz Haggadah. They should all say the same. Shouldn't have half the people saying one bracha, half the people saying the other bracha. Should make up your mind in advance. But it's interesting that it's called the Birchas Hashir. The Birchas Hashir, the bracha begins from Nishmas Kol Chai through Yishtabach. So in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote from the Chai Yodam. The Chai Yodam was a mechutin of the Vilna Goyen. Not exactly, he was a mechutin of one of the children of the Vilna Goyen, but it sounds better to say mechutin of the Vilna Goyen. So he said, my mechutin, the Vilna Goyen, said that we all know if you come late to shul, you have to abridge the Psukah de Zimra. So they told us, when we were young children, they shouldn't have told us that. They told us if you have to abridge it, they say, Baruch Shama Ashrei and Yishtabach. And you abridge the Psukah de Zimra. That's the minimum you have to say is Ashrei. So if it's Shabbos or Yontif, you can't abridge like you have to say, Baruch Shama Ashrei, Nishmas Kol Chai through Yishtabach. Because the bracha begins on Shabbos Yontif, begins from Nishmas Kol Chai. That's what the Chayyadim quotes in the name of the Vilna Gaon. What is the Nishmas Kol Chai all about? We'll close with this. The day will come that all of mankind will recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There will be a Gula HaSidah LaSid Lavai. So that's what we say in the Nishmas Kol Chai Tevarech Hashem HaShem. Okay, the day will come that there will be a Gula HaSidah that will redeem all of mankind from all of the tzaras that we have. Why do we mention this on Pesach night B'davcha? Because this was told to Moshe Rabbeinu before Yetzias Mitzrayim. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to be the messenger to go to speak the parah to see to it that you should let the Jewish people go free. So he said, I'm going to go to the Jewish people. They're going to ask me, Mashmo, what will I tell you? What? I don't know, what is the name of God? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, I will be whom I will be. Hekeh asher hekeh. What does that mean? So Rashi quotes from the Tanoim, I will be with the Jewish people in this galus, and I will be there with them in the future to redeem them from the Gula Hasidah. So that was told to Moshe Rabbeinu before Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's going to be a Gula Hasidah. And that's the whole idea of Sipa Yetzias Mitzrayim HaPesach night, to review all of the Ikori HaMunah with the children and with ourselves, to review them based on all of the experiences of the Esamakos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu in advance, Laman Ravos Mifsa the Eretz Mitzrayim, Yidaitem Ka'ani Hashem, I'm going to make a lot of Nisim and Ifloes. Esa Makas took the course of the year. Each Makkah took approximately a month. Moshe Rabbeinu was warning Paro for 3 weeks, and then the Makkah took 1 week. And then the Esa Makas took 12 months. So that's the maximum that Min HaShemayim, they ever punish anyone. The Gemara said, the worst anyone suffers in Gehenna is Yud Beis Chodesh. No one suffers longer than 12 months. That's why the minig is that we don't say Kaddish for more than 11 months. You don't want to imply as if your parents are suffering the maximum that they can suffer. When my parents died, I didn't think they were going to Gehenna at all. So I wasn't so makbid. When I traveled there, I didn't go crazy. I didn't make a minyan on the airplane. If someone else had Kaddish, let him say Kaddish. I wasn't so worried. If the parents were not so religious, then you got to say Kaddish, okay, to be part of them from Gehenna. The Gemara says that the Dor HaMabul, the punishment was 12 months, and Mishpat Mitzrayim was a whole 12 months they were suffering. So the whole purpose of the Man Ravos, Mavs of Eretz Mitzrayim, what were all of these Nisim of the first? For Yidaitam Ke'an Hashem, to demonstrate all the Ikori HaAmuna. So all the Ikorim were demonstrated that there exists a God who has control over Teva, means God must have created the world, otherwise he wouldn't have control over it. He knows what's happening, and he has the ability to make nisim, and he listens to prayer, and he gives nevuah to human beings. Other philosophers think it's impossible. How can an infinite God communicate with a finite human being? And we can't communicate with God either. It doesn't make sense. Nevuah means God is communicating with man. Tefillah is man is communicating with God. So tefillah works, and nevuah works. And they saw Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu was on a different level from Nevuas Aharon. It was a different level. The Rambam list has two Ikori HaMunah. One is we believe in Nevuah. One is we believe Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu was a higher level. Whatever Moshe Rabbeinu said, no Nabi can refute. The Rambam says, this is one of the Ikorim, because the Christians claim that Osa Huish came, he was a prophet, and he said the laws of the Torah are no longer binding. Mahabit claim, and he was a prophet, he said the laws of the Torah are no longer binding. So the Rambam says, Moshe Rabbeinu is the Adon HaNevim. There's a parsha in Baha'i Loscha. Lo kein avdi Moshe. So when we tell over the Sipa Yetzias Mitzrayim, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if the children don't understand Hebrew, you should say in English. It says in Shulchan Aruch, English, because the Baalei HaTosfos lived in England, and the wives and the children didn't understand Hebrew. So it says in the Ramah, you should say the Haggadah in English. You should say the main parts. You should explain that how all of the Ikori HaMunah were demonstrated. The existence of God, that God created the world, otherwise he wouldn't have control over Teva, and there's only one God, and the Jews shechted the Korban Pesach, the Mitzrayim used to worship the Korban Pesach. We shechted the Korban Pesach, we rejected it, it's not a deity, and Nevuah, and Tefillah, and Gula HaSidah was told to Moshe Rabbeinu, Eyasherekeh, that there will be a Gula HaSidah. That's the main thing at Pesach. To me, Pesach is the Yontav of Amuna. Matzah is the Meichalev, Meichalev de Behemnusa, said in Zohar. It's the Meichalev Amuna. Shavuos is the Yontav of Talmud Torah, that you have to use your mind to understand Torah. But Pesach is the Yontav of Amuna. So you have to review with all the children, all of the Ikori Hamuna. Should all be blessed with good health to enjoy the Seder and the celebration of Pesach, and we shouldn't get sick. We shouldn't have to go to the emergency ward. We should do mitzvahs in a normal way. We shouldn't exaggerate. We shouldn't do ridiculous things. Everyone should be healthy and enjoy the Yom Tov.
Your student, Donnie Shander, his wife.
So that people for me.